This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Great Lakes Echo commentator Gary Wilson tells us what Governor Rick Snyder's re-election could mean for issues related to the environment and water conservation. But first, a new report is calling for a coordination of policies to help low-income families with children. The Annie E. Casey Foundation report is called Creating Opportunity for Families, a Two-Generation Approach. The Michigan League for Public Policy has issued its own recommendations for what this state can do to help low-income families, both children and their parents. Jane Zender Merrill is Project Director of Kids Count in Michigan. Jane Zender Merrill, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Let's kind of start by defining the problem. How big a problem do we have in Michigan in terms of families being in poverty?
Well, over 500,000 young children under the age of 9 in Michigan live in low-income families, and by that we mean under 200% of the poverty level, roughly 47,000 gross income for a family of 4. And that works out to roughly one of every 2 children. So half of our children in this age group are living in families that are financially vulnerable, is the best way to put it. And we see dramatic differences in these families, these low-income families compared with higher-income families.
Are we often talking about families where one or both parents are working?
Yeah. The big issue is that slightly over half, 56% of these parents are working in these families. No parent has a full-time year-round job, which makes a huge difference in terms of stability of employment.
And as we look around the state, the numbers in Southwest Michigan, for instance, the percentages of children 5 and younger living in poverty range from somewhere in the mid-40s to around 60%. If we look at the state, do we see big differences by region, or is it more kind of a uniform percentage? And as we look, we find little pockets here and there where it's better or perhaps worse.
What we find is that regionally, when you sort of merge together the urban core, like in Wayne, and then the surrounding counties, it sort of evens out. But there's dramatic differences, for example, between Livingston, where you only have like 26% of families living below double the poverty level or in low-income families, compared to places like Sheboygan, where we have 72% of our kids that are in low-income families, these young children. So there's a big difference regionally when you get these areas of in northeastern Michigan where you have a number of counties that are rural and high poverty and large percentages of children living in low-income families. Part of it is there's just not a lot of high-paying jobs. There isn't a lot of opportunity in those areas.
And I want to go back for a moment. You mentioned this figure of 200% of the poverty level. Why is that number significant? Why is the line drawn there?
Because what the poverty researchers have found is that when you take what it actually costs in living costs for shelter, transportation, out-of-pocket health expenses, child care, if you have young children and you have to pay for child care, you start totaling all that up and you need an income actually above double the poverty level in order to be self-sufficient, if you will. And that's not including any savings, any going out to the restaurant or going to the movies or paying for a cable bill. That's just basic necessities. It's not paying for internet or computers. So it's very, very basic, and you need more than double the poverty level to live in the American world we live in today.
So when you talk about the policy recommendations, this is called a two-generation approach. What are we talking about when we're talking about two generations?
We're talking about looking at the family as a whole. Like when we try to encourage parents to go back to school, or to enter a job training program, we need to also take into account they have children and make sure that they have access to childcare and that they have what they need in order to be successful in those programs, like work supports, encompass a number of different issues. Like if you apply for one program and you're eligible for another, we should make it easy for you to qualify across the board for the programs for which you're eligible to make sure you have the supports that you need to be successful. We tend to offer services in silos where we have job training programs, and then we have child care subsidy programs, and then we have home visiting programs, and we don't make an effort in many cases to work across programs to make sure that we encompass the totality of what families are grappling with.
So I wanted to go through some of the individual policy proposals laid out by the Michigan League for Public Policy and have you explain what these would mean individually, beginning with expanding the state's earned income tax credit.
Right. It was at 20% of the federal tax credit. On average, it meant an extra $500 for a family of three. We're now down at 6%, so it's been cut to roughly $100. But still, it's very meaningful for a family that's living on the margin, and we have numerous research studies that show the difference that a few thousand dollars can make in a family that's living at the margin. So to offset some of the other taxes that parents are up against, expanding the state earned income tax credit, which primarily benefits families with children, really does make a difference, particularly in families with young children where they're starting out. Parents are starting out in the world in terms of their job experience, so they tend to be paid less. But it's also at a point where expenses are very high, and the impact on children is also very profound. So the more we can do to channel supports to families with young children, we know from all this brain research that that can make long-lasting impact on the outcomes for those kids.
You also call for enacting schedules that work legislation, which requires employers to give workers their schedules at least 2 weeks ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Right now, it's really up to the individual employer. And families that work part-time not only do not have benefits, but they don't have control over their schedule. And they often don't know what their schedule is from day to day even. So it's an attempt to regulate this in a way that acknowledges what's happening to parents who are trying to work and are not able to qualify for a full-time job or work at a full-time job. So it would give parents some more stability to cope with and be more effective parents, to be more responsive to the needs of their kids in terms of making healthcare appointments, meeting with their child care provider, whatever. There's a lot to do when you're a parent of a young child. And yet, if you're trying to meet the needs of your children and it costs you your job, that really doesn't solve the problem. I mean, that just creates more problems. So trying to stabilize work and make it more possible for parents to be parents.
And you also note that Michigan does not have any laws regarding paid family and sick time.
Right. And there's been several communities across the country where that's been put in place. We do have nationally the family and medical leave, but there's no allowance there for getting any kind of paid time. And it's increasingly apparent that low-income parents cannot afford to lose that time. They need every dollar that comes into the family. So to acknowledge that people get sick, particularly people that are working in the restaurant industry around food, benefits all of us that they don't come into work when they are sick because they need the money. And it also is important for parents to keep their children home from school or from a daycare or childcare facility when their children are sick. So in the end, it benefits all of us to not have sick children and sick parents in the workplace or in the childcare or school facility.
There's also a recommendation to restore financial aid to older adults to attend Michigan's public universities. We actually discussed this with Gilda Jacobs not too long ago, but explain what you're calling for there and how this would help families who are trying to climb out of poverty.
Well, when you look at the age of the parents of families with young children, 85% of these parents are over the age of 25, which puts them in that non-traditional category. And what we've done in Michigan is we've eliminated all the grants for these older students, many of whom have families. So by doing that, we not only we just erect another barrier for parents who want to go back and get any kind of credential so that they can get a better job and become more skilled and get not only be competitive for jobs, but get a well-paid job. So we should be doing everything we can to make it easy for parents to go back to school and get access to the training that they need to become better workers. That's what this economy needs, and Michigan needs more educated workers. So it would seem that we would be doing everything possible to make it easier to do.
And improve child care subsidies for working families with low incomes.
Oh, this is huge. This is huge because our child care subsidy is woefully outdated in terms of the payment. It's well below what it costs for child care. And we also pay for child care by the hour. And the whole child care industry or business is built on having a full-time or part-time care, not having people show up for a couple of hours and then the child leaves and comes back 2 days later for a couple of hours. That's just not the way child care is delivered by and large. So it really restricts access to child care, particularly licensed child care, for parents who work low-income jobs with unpredictable schedules and inflexible schedules. There's one more thing. Even basic health and safety is being compromised in our child care system. A recent audit found that our licensing consultants, which should be one for every 50 providers, is at one of for every 153. So we're at triple the caseload that we should be at in order to assure health and safety, basic health and safety requirements in our child care facilities.
The news release from the Michigan League for Public Policy and Kids Count in Michigan notes that Michigan is on the right track with a P20 educational data system that, when fully implemented, will be two-generational. Explain a little bit about what this means. What is Michigan doing right here?
Well, we're tracking what kind of services parents and families receive over time and then where they end up in terms of their educational achievement and job access and dependence on public programs. So the object of the exercise is to better serve the needs of families, kids, and parents so that they can get to where they need to be in order to support themselves. So it is a good thing that we're starting to look at this long term. Unfortunately, in the legislature, sometimes we have a very short-term vision of what we need to be successful.
Jane Zinner-Merrill, thank you for your time.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for giving us some opportunity to talk about this really important issue.
Jane Zinner-Merrill is Project Director for Kids Count in Michigan. You can find links with the NEE Casey Foundation report at WMUK.org.